Prajapati Daksha continued, if you think that simply awakening the sense of renunciation will detach one from the material world, I must say that unless full knowledge is awakened, simply changing dresses as you have done cannot possibly bring detachment. Purport. Prajapati Daksha was correct in stating that changing one's dress cannot detach one from this material world. The sannyasis of Kali Yuga who change their robes from white to saffron and then think they can do whatever they like are more abominable than materialistic grihasthas. This is not recommended anywhere. Prajapati Daksha was right in pointing out this defect, but he did not know that Narad Muni had aroused the spirit of renunciation in the Hariashvas and Savalashvas through full knowledge. Such enlightened renunciation is desirable. One should enter the renounced order with full knowledge, jnana vairagya, for the perfection of life is possible for one who renounces this material world in that way. This elevated stage can be reached very easily, as supported by the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam. Give Dhanam to Prabhupada. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayada Haitukam. By rendering devotional service under the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. If one seriously engages in devotional service to Lord Vasudeva, jnana and vairagya are automatically manifest in one's person. There is no doubt of this. Prajapati Daksha's accusation that Narad had not actually elevated his sons to the platform of knowledge was not factual. All the sons of Prajapati Daksha had first been raised to the platform of jnana and had then automatically renounced this world. In summary, unless one's knowledge is awakened, renunciation cannot take place, for without elevated knowledge, one cannot give up attachment for material enjoyment. Daksha is making a philosophical case against Narad Muni. And more or less everything Daksha says here is correct. Not only is it's correct from the Shastric point of view and from practical observation. However, what he's saying, or correct means it can be supported by Shastric statements. However, what he's saying is not, he's trying to present a case that he's neutrally presenting the facts. But actually he's doing so because he has his own outlook which he wants to support. So there's two basic ways of making a philosophical presentation. One is neutral. Neutral means he's sincerely concerned with understanding what is the fact. Such a person is called Saragrahi, one who accepts the essence. And the other, who may also quote Shastra very well and make a very good case according to logic, and support his case with Shastra quotes, and may be very difficult to defeat in argumentation, but actually he has some motivation. He's not approaching Shastra for the sake of seeing what Shastra has to teach us, but understanding that Shastra is accepted as authority, he has his own motivation, which he wants to use the Shastric position to support that. So he's speaking as if he's the great well-wisher of his sons, and I really want the best for my sons, and therefore they shouldn't become renounced, and I'm supporting this with the Shastric position. But actually he's materially attached, and he doesn't know what's best for his sons, And he doesn't, even though he's got so much Shastric knowledge and able to present a position, he's Dhanadurmadandhan, he's blinded by the by wealth, position, by material desires, and therefore, even though whatever he's saying may appear to be what we call reasonable, it's actually, and it's everything he says is supported by, can be supported by Shastra, but it doesn't apply in this situation. What he's saying is supportable by Shastra, but he's applying it in the wrong situation. He's applying, here he's saying that renunciation, if you try to forcibly make people renounce when they're not ready, then it's not good for them. But he hasn't seen it. Actually, they are fully ready by the mercy of Narad Muni. So he's applying the law or the logic in a case where it doesn't apply. He can't see that. He doesn't want to see that. He doesn't want to see his sons are so renounced, which means that they're more spiritually advanced than he is. And he doesn't, even though he's talking as if, yes, renunciation is very good, but actually he doesn't like the principle of renunciation at all, because he was in materialistic sense enjoy it. So he's saying, yes, well, renunciation is very good, but no one should do it. We recognize that it's good, but it's only for very highly elevated persons. And so like that, we hear that, yes, pure devotion is very good, but we should be realistic and see where we're actually at and go on with our materialist. Well, not that we, no, we're actually devotees, but we're doing everything for Krishna. Krishna likes me to watch TV because, you know, I have to adjust, have to be a properly adjusted individual. Oh, so many ideas come. So Daksha is speaking in a very reasonable way. I was just considering the last few days, we often hear this saying that, well, we should be reasonable. This is very important, to be reasonable. But actually, we don't, even though from what's considered in the modern way of thinking, what is presented in Shastra is reasonable in many ways, but we don't find that in Vedic culture, that people say, you should be reasonable. They say that you should follow dharma. What Arjuna presented to Krishna was very reasonable. We were just reading this morning, Bhagavad Gita, that, well, we should, there's so many arguments Arjuna gave, we shouldn't attack the elders. We shouldn't leave the women unprotected just for the sake of our own desire to lord over a kingdom. We shouldn't cause so much disaster in human society. Everything Arjuna said was very reasonable, it seems. What does this mean by reasonable? It's in Kavi talk, it's, what is it they say, you win, I win, something like that. What do they say? Something like, all winners, something like that.
Win-win
situation, yeah. But it's nonsense. There's no win-win situation in the material world. It's all lose-lose. But this win-win, that you win, I win, this is based on the assumption that people are reasonable and that they'll deal with you. If you deal with them nicely, they'll deal with you nicely. But it's not true. In the material world, everyone's trying to exploit everyone else. So if you, in actual business dealings, if you give people, you deal with them very nicely, they'll just exploit you. You were just saying this in Salem, you're trying to get this land, and then this doctor's friend, he was pushing, no, you sell to me. So he sold it to him, I want to build my house there. He sold it to him, and the same day that man sold it to another man and made 14 lakhs profit. And he didn't care that his friendship is broken because he was just exploiting him. That's the nature of the material world. Everyone is trying to exploit everyone else. There are different kinds of philosophical outlooks. That one is in countries, well, in Sweden in particular, they have this outlook. Their whole legal polity is based on the assumption that basically people are good. So if someone's a criminal, it's not really his fault, it's the rest of the society's fault, because they didn't deal with him properly. So put him in prison, but in the prison you're allowed to go out anytime you like. And it's ridiculous. And the Vedic assumption is more realistic, that Icha Dvesha Simultana Dvandva Mohena Bharata Sarva Bhutani Samaham Sarva Yanti Parantapa. That people are good, basically, but in this material world they're not. In this material world, everyone has come here with material desire, with the idea to exploit others for their own sense gratification. So what is called being reasonable, people, there's this idea we should be reasonable, but people hide behind that to try to promote their unreasonable policy. That's why I say that in many ways Hitler is better than George Bush, because Hitler's just said that, look, we're Germans and we to hell with you, we're invading your country and you're under our boots. Whereas George Bush does the same thing, but in the name of humanity, democracy, peace, tolerance. And George Orwell, he predicted this in his book 1984, that in the name of peace, there's the Ministry of Peace, which its only job is to wage war. So he saw it coming, this double talk. He called it double talk. So in the name of being reasonable, in the name of dharma, everyone is just appearing to be nice, but actually they have their own program, which is how to Ishvara Hamaham Bhogi, how to maximize my position as the controller and enjoyer of this world. So Daksha is doing so here, presenting dharma. But his presentation of dharma is adharma. So he's in the name, in the words of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bharavahi. Different kinds of people. One is Bharavahi and the other is Saragrahi. Bharavahi is, he's carrying a load, the load of his material desires. And the Saragrahi is one who seeks the essence, one who's actually interested in the truth, understanding the fact of the matter. So this is the gift of the acharyas, the shastra, shrutiyo vibhinnaha. The different shastras say different things, and people may be very attached to shastra, the mimamsa. They're very much attached to shastra, but they like the section in shastra which describes how yamimam pushpitam vacham, the flowery words which recommend elevation to the heavenly planets, and they explain the part about renunciation. Well, they say that's only for useless people who, you know, they can't get their act together. So when they can go for this renunciation, but actually the purpose of the Vedas is to act in a manner that we can get material enjoyment. The purpose is to enjoy. Actually, Prabhupada said that when he was asked, what is the purpose of life? Once he said, to enjoy. But then he explained that there's no enjoyment in this material world. Every jiva has the desire to enjoy, because that is the nature of the pure soul, a reflection of the original enjoyer, Krishna. But the jiva has to be understood that the jiva can only enjoy by partaking in Krishna's enjoyment, serving Krishna. So the attempt to enjoy independently from Krishna is always a source of great distress. And the Vedas, the Vedic knowledge, it's like a trap for those who are not saragrahi, because it recommends that you perform pious activities. And by doing so, you get what is called good karma, although there's good karmic result. But intrinsically, there's no difference between good karmic result and bad karmic result, because both are stages of forgetfulness of Krishna, which is all inauspicious for the jiva. So the jiva, because he has the propensity to forget Krishna and lord it over the material world and try to enjoy the material world, he sees in the Vedas, he says, oh, perform pious activities, you get more enjoyment. Okay, let's do that. But that, actually the getting the result of pious activities is in many ways more inauspicious for the jiva. What they call mangal or shubham, it's actually in many ways more inauspicious for the jiva than to get the results of impious activities, because when he gets janmaishvarya shuta shri, birth in a high family, material opulence, good looks, good intelligence, not good intelligence, but apparently from the materialistic point of view, good, actually bad intelligence. So then he's in more position to feel that he's more opportunity to feel I'm in the enjoyer of the material world. So it actually, this is the cycle. You increase your piety, then you get more opportunity to enjoy, and then the demoniac propensities come out. I shall enjoy. And then again you fall down to the demoniac way of life. So it's a hopeless situation. So this all the Vedic knowledge, how you should enjoy. Daksha is convinced. We should enjoy. Renunciation. Even the renunciation. Then the jnanis, they say, yes, this material world is miserable. Let us cultivate knowledge and detachment. But they're also in this... Ultimately, they have the same mood, Ishvaraham Aham Bhogi. They're not surrendered to Krishna. They're finding that they've seen that the attempts to enjoy this material world are so fruitless and so opposite. What is it? You get the opposite result. They're so self-contradictory that I will enjoy better by not trying to enjoy this material world. It's still the same spirit of enjoyment. It's not actually spiritual advancement. So it's the suicide position, that this material life is totally miserable, so just let's cut out of it altogether and go, and then we can have the Brahmananda, the enjoyment of thinking I am one and one is all, and everything is one, but I'm more one than you, because I'm Brahmalin and you're still in Maya. So we're all one, but I'm more one out than you are. So I'm really one and you're still in Dvaita. You're still in the two-ness position. So the one who has become one with the one gets carried by the ones who are... He gets carried on a big palanquin by the ones who think that they haven't become to that situation. So very proudly he gets carried around, thinking I am Brahmalin. Although actually he eats so much and then the food has become merged with his body. I'm just talking about one Mayavadi, one big fat Mayavadi I saw once being carried around on a palanquin, looking so puffed up. Extremely puffed up, sitting like this, being carried around by these foolish people. So, jnana, the renunciation of the non-devotees is just the flip side, the reverse side of the attempt to enjoy the material world by the karmas. But it's all sanctioned, apparently, not actually sanctioned, but there are recommendations in the Vedic literature, and very strong recommendations, that you must do this. And there are even stories to back it up. You have to get married and have children. Otherwise, what will happen? There's the the stories that was that Agastya Muni saw the Balakilyas hanging upside down from a tree. They're only this big, 60,000 of them. And why are you doing this so sturdy? Because, well, we never got married. So actually, not to get married and be renounced, if one is not on the path of bhakti, then if one renounces prematurely, then that may also be a dharma, because one has debts to pay. Devarshi bhutaptan rinam pitrinam. The debts to the devas, the rishis, the other human beings, all other kind of living beings, and to the forefathers. So one doesn't get absolved from those. One has to get absolved from those by performing duties in the grihastha ashram. Then he can renounce. That's the method for those who are in maya. And for those who are, and they think they're getting free from maya by renouncing, but they're just going from one phase of maya to another phase. But those who are free from maya, they see the nature of this material world and understand we are meant for serving Krishna. Then they renounce, and their renunciation is very solid. But Daksha couldn't understand this. He saw they're renouncing, they're immature, they didn't become detached, they didn't execute their duties, therefore Narad Muni has done a great disservice to them. He doesn't understand. He has knowledge of the Vedic position. Expensive area, but at time to time you get disturbed by the planes flying over. So Daksha had knowledge of superficial knowledge. He didn't understand the essence, and he never could understand the essence because he's grihamurhadhi. He's foolish. Foolishly attached to family life. Even he has knowledge of the Vedas, but the attachment is so strong that he can't see the essence of the Vedas. He's attracted to the promises of sense gratification. Even though he can see, we're just in a temporary situation. The Prajapatis, they have a much longer lifespan than we in our present bodies do. But still, it's just a very brief span of life. But they take pleasure in Stri Aishwarya Prajetsava. Women, opulence, children, grandchildren. Daksha, he's the father of so not only human living entities, but snakes, birds, reptiles. So he can, wherever he looks, he'll see, oh, it's all my offspring, the feeling that I have created this. You see, when someone has their first child, a father becomes proud. He becomes proud of what? Of doing what every other man does, and every dog does, and every cat does, and every elephant, and but they become proud. My son. I did it. I showed I'm a man. I produced a child. This is mine. So, well, that expands. Ato griha kshetra sutabdha vitaya, that expands. The illusion expands by becoming a father. I am the creator. I have given birth. But it's not so. Therefore, renunciation. Compulsively, yesterday we were reading in the Bhagavatam, leaving home at the age of 50 is compulsory. compulsory, well, there's no law, but it's compulsory for those who want to fulfill the actual purpose of human life. Of course, one can also do so earlier. That's also possible. But the point is that one has to get free from material attachments, which run very, very deep. The Shastra teaches us this. There's so many shlokas here in Bhagavatam, so many shlokas, but which people mostly they don't like to hear. There's so many shlokas. Pumsastriya mittani bhavametam. People don't like to hear this. They like to hear descriptions of Krishna stealing the bhata, but descriptions of how material life is attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. How kanduryanena, what is that? How is that? Yang maitanadi grihamedi sukham hitucham. How material happiness is based on the sex life, and it's simply insignificant and abominable. People don't like to hear these slogans. They like to hear nice stories. So if we actually preaching in the beginning, in many ways it means cheating people, because if you tell everyone everything at the beginning, hardly anyone will come. Most people are not interested in the truth. So we tell them, you be happy and you can get peace of mind, and they have personality development seminars and the art of mind control and all this kind of thing. But the whole idea is that people should come in and understand that I can't control my mind, I can't control anything, Krishna is the controller. And personality development means to give up thinking that I am this personality, I am Indian, I am a software professional and so on, and understand that my personality is Jiva Surupoi Krishna Nitya Das, and everything develops from that. And your so-called good qualities, independent of understanding that, are all demoniac actually. Your so-called being reasonable, your so-called being nice, it's all just a front for cheating others. And everyone is cheating everyone else. And even though they have all these seminars, in the business life, in the office life, everyone, people who go to these seminars, then they politely stab others in the back. More politely, that's all. They learn how to politely scheme and politic their way. That's all. So, we may cheat people to some extent, but ultimately we have to, if people are going to become Krishna conscious, they have to understand all these things. Now this is maybe a little bit of a big topic. You won't have to go out on book distribution. Maybe I'll speak on this another time. But what I'm seeing in India, especially at the present time, is that we're preaching in such a manner that we're encouraging people to cultivate their material desires and at the same time calling it bhakti. That's why we hear people say that, well, yes, having a good career, that's part of your devotional service. And someone said, then I asked, well, what is that? Is that shravanam, kirtanam? Which part is it? And say, well, I'm going to have a good career, and then people will respect that, and it's good for preaching. So it's a kind of self-cheating, because maybe that's true, but actually it's you could say at best it's dovetailing one's material desires, that I want to have a good... Having a good career means you have to give yourself mind, body and soul to HP or some other multinational whatever company you may be in. And then where's the time for your bhakti? And where's the inclination? Your bhakti just becomes an adjunct to your full surrender to your company, because you don't get a so-called good career. It means you become a better paid ass. You don't get a good career unless you work harder than an ass would agree to. So it's a kind of self-deception, but it's very popular and successful. You get many followers and they're all very polite and well-behaved because they're all coming from the corporate sector and they know how to politely cheat each other and exploit each other and all this kind of thing. And this politeness is considered bhakti, but it's not. Simply to be sophisticated and so-called well-behaved, that is not bhakti. Bhakti means sarvopadi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchite. Engaging, being free from all these designations. I'm an MSc, I'm a PhD, I'm an IIT graduate, etc. And engaging all our senses in the service not of our company, but of Krishna. So we can say that yes, this is bhakti, but it's karma mishra bhakti at best, and to promote this as pure devotional service it's institutionalized cheating. Anyway, I want to speak about that more at some point in time. And so, Hare Krishna, I'll finish there. Because we have more important things to do. We have to go out on book distribution, isn't it? We'll speak more later. So, any question? Comment?
Maharaj, what should be our position in terms of preaching to others? Like, we see that there are some compromises done. Let's say, for example, with students to finish the college first and then join, and especially avoiding criticism from the society that you're leaving your parents or something like this. Well, that is your responsibility. So, do we compromise in such situations at some points, or
we have to see each situation individually. I don't want to give any blanket statements. One thing we have to see is that many times people who want to join immediately, their motive may not be that they're fully wanting to surrender to Krishna, but they. It's what they're accused of, escapism. It's also, of course, it's intelligent to want to escape from all of that, but if the motive to escape is much stronger than the motive to surrender to Krishna, maybe that they're just lazy in executing their so-called material duties, and they may not be very, we have to see if they're actually committed to work hard and surrender for Krishna. We're not saying don't work hard, we're saying work hard for Krishna. So we have a way of life that requires great commitment. So if people are just leaving because they don't want to go through with their commitments, then that has to be seen. There is also the point that if we do take people out from their courses and this and that, and it becomes difficult to enter the college that we find. I mean, if they find that happens, that if we take people out before their course is finished, and they won't allow us in the college because they're earning money, and if they're losing money from taking people out, and then the parents, if the college gets a reputation that the people who go there, they have a good chance of being kidnapped in between, then parents will be reluctant to send their children there, and then they lose their money, so they'll become very upset. Why are you spoiling these people's lives? Means why are you disturbing our means of income? They say one thing, but they mean something else. They don't care about the students' lives. They don't. They just they need to make a good show so that their income keeps on rolling in. So there are some considerations like that. We have to consider also, because we are living in this world among people who have, like Daksha, In India, it means people are, they're pious materialists. So, many people, they're pious materialists. Dharmic, not really dharmic, we could say religious. So that, yeah, that we can, if we preach like that, we can make, if we preach, you can be a pious materialist. Then many people will appreciate, many people like to come. It's very difficult to get people beyond that point, actually. In many ways, it's very effective to expand our movement by, of course we don't say directly, but actually it comes out as pious materialism. And it's very difficult to get anyone to understand the point that piety and materialism in itself are no better than pig stool. So it's very difficult. Then the real thing is to surrender to Krishna. So it's easier to dress up surrender to Krishna, or dress up pious materialism as surrender to Krishna, which it isn't. So what should be the policy? Bring people in and then hope that they gradually, maybe when they're reading Prabhupada's books, that one day it'll ding, actually that's meant to be true. It's not just something, it's not just Prabhupada's fanaticism or something. I don't know what, if they're reading Prabhupada's books, what they, I don't know if their mind just blanks out when, I mean, they have to blank out about over about 90% of the books or something. I don't know how people can reinterpret, but it's, and if you read Prabhupada's books, it's very difficult to regularly, it's very difficult to remain thinking that the purpose of life is to enjoy this material world. So maybe the hope is there that people can gradually become purified. But one thing is, if we don't regularly, that means always, present the facts as they are, and if we try to play some game, we also get caught up in it. We'll also lose our own Krishna consciousness. We also become part of the game. So unless we speak the facts very clearly, then everything becomes all hazy. And bhakti and punya and the different, we don't see the difference, and it all becomes one, even in our own minds. So it's better to stick to the principle. An ounce of gold is worth tons of rubbish. More, it's worth more. Even pious rubbish. Rejected. Dharma projita kaitava atra. Paramo niyamat saranam satam. Yeah.
In your lecture, I was hearing the Prabhupada's explaining how, who can take sannyas. Only a Brahmana can go up to stage of sannyas. A Kshatriya is blocked at the stage of vanaprastha.
Yeah, that's karma sannyas. That's karma sannyas. The actual. Yeah, and then for, and the only sanskar for the Shudras is Vivaha sanskar. He was talking about that. Yeah. For women and Shudras, there's only one sanskar.
Is that applicable in Kali Yuga and Krishna?
Karma sannyas is not applicable in Kali Yuga. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted Brahma Vaivarta Purana, that sannyas is one of the five activities forbidden in Kali Yuga, so the acharyas have explained that means karma sannyas. Because anyway, people are not following the path of karma properly anyway. But actual sannyas, to become the, what is it, etans astaya paratmanishtam, to follow the path of full surrender to Mukunda, that is swarupgata sannyas. That's the sannyas that's connected to the soul. So that's always applicable. Chudanda sannyas, that's not sannyas in the sense that Krishna speaks of in the Bhagavad Gita, or that he refers to, that. What is that first verse? Nani Ragni Anachakriya, first verse of the sixth chapter? Anashrita Karma Phalam. Yeah, he's talking about karma sannyas. Anashrita Karma Phalam, Kayam Karma Karoti Sasanyas. So he distinguishes the Tridanda sannyasi, that who has dedicated his mind, body, and words in the service of Krishna, to the karma sannyasi, who tries to become free from the results of karma phala. He has no contact with fire or Vedic rituals. But Tridanda sannyas, this every Vaishnava, whatever ashram superficially he may be in, is supposed to be a Tridandi. Mind, body, and words engaged in the service of Krishna.
Going back to the previous level we can reach this, because sometimes, not sometimes, but very often, you know, devotees are disturbed if you preach about this, you know, mundane piety, disguising as a Krishna consciousness.
People who are disturbed means it's like Daksha being disturbed. He's a mundane, pious person. What level? You're worried about people becoming disturbed? Then don't preach. Don't read Srimad Bhagavatam. If we actually want to preach, then our first consideration is not how people become disturbed. Definitely, if we're going to speak, what needs to be spoken, actually, what needs to be spoken is that which will disturb people. So if you say, well, people are becoming disturbed, oh, that's good. That means I'm speaking. What should be... If people are not becoming disturbed, then there's probably then something wrong. Jayadvaita Swami is quoting something. I'm citing authority from some... He saw in some Christian manual that the duty of a preacher is to comfort those who are disturbed and disturb those who are not disturbed. Something like that.
Disturb those who are
comfortable. Disturb those who are
comfortable, yeah. Because very often we hear about balance. Some balance should be...
Yeah, balance means everything's okay, I'm okay, you're okay, everything's okay, and be mature. Mature means be in Maya. This is redefinition. Mature means don't have faith in Shastra. Don't repeat what Prabhupada said. This is called being mature. It's rascal, actually. I sometimes wonder if Prabhupada was here nowadays, if they'd allow him in ISKCON. Mm-hmm. He'd be considered too radical or something like that. We like this. Prabhupada Murti, he sits there and we think he doesn't say anything.